from the Moen Broadcast Center at KPCC. This is The Frame. I'm John Horn. On today's show, Pay Up Hollywood has grown into a movement as show business assistants call for better pay and working conditions. Then Charlize Theron plays former Fox News anchor Megyn Kelly in the movie Bombshell, and she says what happened at the cable channel can happen anywhere.
The everyday going to work, the process, the being called a bitch when you're just trying to be the best at your job, all of those things felt very familiar to me.
And if you have to bite your tongue over the holidays, there's an art project that helps you get things off your chest. All that coming up on The Frame. Welcome to The Frame. I'm John Horn. This is a segment that aired earlier this month, but it's a topic that's so important, we think it merits an encore. Assistants in the entertainment industry are overworked, underpaid, physically abused, and often have to run personal errands for their bosses, even after they leave work for the day. That's according to a new survey of more than 1,500 assistants released by a grassroots movement called Pay Up Hollywood. Katie Kilkenny is an associate editor at The Hollywood Reporter, where she covers labor, and she explains how the movement grew out of an episode of a podcast about screenwriting called Script Notes.
A assistant wrote in saying, you know, I think one of the big issues that's going to be coming forward in the next few decades in Hollywood is that we're going to have to talk about the low pay that assistants are facing and how that is related to rising cost of living in Los Angeles. And from there, the hosts, which are John August and Craig Mazin, who are both really powerful writers in Hollywood, read that note and asked for more people to talk about their stories of being an assistant in Los Angeles. And they just got an overwhelming amount of email. And a writer named Liz Alper, who is on the board of the Writers Guild of America, started a hashtag called hashtag Pay Up Hollywood.
So a couple of days before Thanksgiving, Script Notes facilitated a Pay Up Hollywood town hall where assistants had a chance to talk about some of the issues. And here's what one woman who didn't provide her name had to say about burnout.
We almost have like three jobs at once. Like, not only are we working our day job for 40 to 60 hours a week and not making enough, and then therefore we're doing work on the side, like babysitting, driving, etc., but we also have the work of our own careers. And I think that is like what leads to that burnout, because we're not only expected to have this day job that like puts all these things in place for us to move forward, and then on top of that we're expected to have like an hour to write a day or to fund our own short films and make them on the weekends. Like, that is just like impossible.
I think impossible is an accurate word for what she's describing. What were some of the other issues that came up around the hashtag and around the town hall?
So I think a big one is the question of access. You know, Hollywood has been talking a lot about its diversity issues and wanting to get more folks into the pipeline of diverse backgrounds. But what we're looking at here is a situation where you have to be able to afford to be an assistant in the first place to get that first leg up in the industry. And so Pay Up Hollywood has just released a survey of 1,551 assistants, and they found that 78% of the people who were surveyed were white, and that 52% were receiving financial aid from family and friends to make ends meet as they were assistants in Hollywood. So I think we're seeing that this industry, in order to diversify, does have to become more accessible, more economically accessible to folks who aren't coming in with that aid. So that to me was notable, as well as the fact that a lot of assistants were also talking about the sort of demeaning work conditions that were expected of them. You know, Hollywood has a pay your dues culture, and I think a lot of folks remember some difficult work conditions when they were assistants, and so sort of expect that their assistants will have to go through that as well. But in this survey, it showed that 104 respondents had an object thrown at them in the workplace. So I think that we're looking at conditions where assistants are not only being pretty badly paid, but also they are facing work conditions that are pretty rough.
We're talking with Katie Kilkenny at The Hollywood Reporter about Pay Up Hollywood. There are other things that really jumped out to me. One is that almost 93% of those people surveyed said they work more than 40 hours a week, and 15% said they were working more than 60 hours a week. And here was something that was really troubling. Almost a quarter said that they had reported an increase in substance abuse. So it sounds like the job is really taking a terrible toll on the people who are in this line of work.
Completely. I mean, I think these numbers sort of show something that, you know, assistants have been talking to each other about for a long time. And so I think for a lot of assistants, this is not a surprise, but this survey really shines a light on some of these issues and the fact that things need to change.
And it sounds like some showrunners are actually saying this is unsustainable and maybe even immoral.
Absolutely. So I talked to a few folks who had been vocal on Twitter with their support and basically found out while I was talking to them that they were advocating for higher wages on projects that they're currently developing. And these are Adam Conover, who folks might know from True TV's Adam Ruins Everything, David H. Steinberg, who was a co-showrunner on Netflix's No Good Nick, and the writer, producer, creator, Ilette Waldman, who was an executive producer on Netflix's Unbelievable. Waldman in particular told me that she was trying to get her assistants $20 an hour plus benefits. And Conover was saying that he was trying to adjust various aspects of the job to make it more tenable.
You said in your story that you had reached out to the major studios and talent agencies for comment. And let's just say they weren't flooding the phone lines calling back. Have any of them had anything to say?
One agency is doing something, and they didn't provide comment for the story, but you know, I heard via sources that Verve, which is the talent agency that represents both John August, who helped create this movement, as well as Liz Alper, who coined the hashtag, has conducted an anonymous pay survey of their assistants. And we'll also be receiving and looking at the results of the Pay Up Hollywood survey. And I imagine that in weeks to come, others will speak up more. But for now, they are remaining mum.
And even if the hours are horrible, the working conditions aren't great, a lot of people want these jobs, right? Because it's so hard to get into the business. And this is one possible path for people who want to become creative people in Hollywood.
Definitely. They're extremely competitive jobs. And often a line that is used with assistants who want to speak up about work conditions is that, you know, there are thousands that will take your place. But it's gotten to the point where the wages are the same as they were 20 years ago in some cases. That's what we're hearing from a lot of these stories, while the cost of living in Los Angeles has skyrocketed. And so these assistants' argument is that the situation is untenable at this point.
Katie Kilkenny is an associate editor at The Hollywood Reporter. Katie, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Coming up on The Frame, Charlize Theron wore two hats for the movie Bombshell, actress and producer. Welcome back to The Frame. I'm John Horn. In the new movie Bombshell, Charlize Theron plays former Fox News anchor Megyn Kelly. In her time at Fox and later in a very brief stint at NBC, Kelly came under fire for many controversial comments, like saying Jesus and Santa Claus are white or defending Halloween costumes that use blackface. There was a controversy of another sort in 2015 when Kelly questioned Donald Trump in the first Republican presidential primary debate about derogatory comments he'd made about women. The focus of Bombshell is not just on Kelly, but on other women at the network, including former Fox News host Gretchen Carlson. Carlson, who's played by Nicole Kidman in the film, sued Fox News CEO Roger Ailes for sexual harassment in 2016. Kelly would later say that Ailes, who died in 2017, also made unwanted sexual advances toward her in the mid-2000s. Charlize Theron sums up Bombshell this way.
It's a movie about a group of very unlikely women who, if you were, you know, writing a fictional story, you would not necessarily cast as your central characters to tell a story of taking down the biggest media mogul. And yet they did.
Why were they unlikely, do you think?
Well, because I think a lot of them, you know, Gretchen and Megyn had made some comments prior to all of this about sexual harassment that I found somewhat opposite, or not necessarily, let me say this, not necessarily helpful to the cause of a lot of victims or, you know, women who are experiencing sexual harassment. I think there is a conservative view on sexual harassment as, how do you believe women? How do you know it's true? How the emphasis is always on doubting the victim, doubting the woman. And I just thought it was interesting that they had those views before in the past about sexual harassment. Megyn Kelly famously refuses to be called a feminist. You know, they are somewhat the most unlikely feminist that you will find.
No, and Megyn Kelly had said some very problematic things about campus assaults and whether or not the men were not believed and that the women were believed too easily, I guess, is a harsh but I think fair way to paraphrase her position. Yes. When you read Charles Randolph's script for Bombshell, what was your reaction and what was going on in your professional career when you came across it?
You know, I was, we had a lot of things at Denver and Delilah, my production company and development, and very strangely, we were in development on a project with Jay Roach, who ended up directing Bombshell. And we read it and just, we really loved it. I mean, you have to understand, the script was written pre-Me Too or pre-Time's Up, pre-Harvey Weinstein. There wasn't any of what is out there right now in our culture as far as this conversation. It felt somewhat like a story in its own silo. But people were definitely kind of whispering about a lot of what was about to come out. And so when we read the script, we were aware a little bit of, I mean, nobody could predict how big all of this would be, but we were aware that there was something timely about the script.
It's like we're telling women, go on, speak up for yourself. Just know the entire network is with Roger. No one will believe you. They'll call you a liar. Oh, and as for your career, you want assignments and airtime? Go ahead. Call the paranoid man who decides your salary a pervert and do that on a f***ing anonymous hotline he controls. On a phone, he has a contractual right to record. Jesus f***ing Christ. Do you think women are idiots?
We're talking with Charlize Theron, who is an actor in and producer of the new movie Bombshell. I want to read you a passage from Megyn Kelly's book, Settle for More. And what she is describing is a 2005 incident with Roger Ailes. It was an upsetting, impossible dynamic. Here was this man, my boss, on the cover of industry magazines as the most powerful man in news, a man whose good opinion I desperately wanted, who could make or break my budding television career. I was beyond happy to be working there. I had finally achieved my dream. The last thing I wanted was this kind of monkey wrench thrown into our relationship. Monkey wrench is a kind word for what Roger Ailes did.
Yeah.
But in that passage, what Megyn Kelly writes about is about power and about a power dynamic where the man holds the cards and the employee, in this case, Megyn Kelly, doesn't.
Yeah, and I think what was really interesting about what happened at Fox was that you saw this diverse group of women, meaning generational differences, Gretchen Carlson, Megyn Kelly. Gretchen Carlson was kind of, she was struggling with her career. She was not necessarily pulling in the viewership that they really wanted. And so she was definitely kind of like in a position where she didn't really have a lot of ground to stand on, whereas Megyn Kelly was a rock star at that time at Fox. She was actually in the process of, I think, negotiating one of the biggest deals over there. And then, of course, we have another character that's kind of in a composite of a lot of younger women who started working at Fox and experienced what Megyn talks about and Gretchen talks about when you started working at Fox with Roger Ailes, this kind of grooming that he would do with younger women who came in super eager and with a lot of drive and ambition to work in journalism. And, you know, he just kind of, he followed this behavior. There was this pattern of his behavior, which was, you know, what Megyn talks about, sometimes incredibly paternal, sometimes incredibly controlling, obviously very entitled, but always giving really good advice and feeling like he was fully investing in you. And so this becomes very complicated, right? Because Megyn Kelly is really admitting to something that maybe a lot of women would not admit to, and that is when you have a moral dilemma where you really truly understand that you are benefiting from this kind of attention that you're getting from this man who's making your career, knowing full well that there is this other behavior that's incredibly toxic and damaging. Do you, as a woman, throw everything away, all of it, because that is what women have to do in order to come forward with these stories. Most of the women who came forward with their stories at Fox have never worked in broadcasting again. Do you risk it all? And, you know, from the comfort of your own home and your own moral compass, it's a very easy thing to say, yes, you do the right thing. You speak up because you protect people and you don't. But you have to understand, with the world that we live in already for women, that is, those are complicated things. Those are tricky things that you know, took me a while to kind of wrap my head around in doing the research of this film.
What did you find in the research? Because there is the physical transformation that takes place, but there is the internal one. And often the internal one is much more important to an actor than the external one. And was there a point where you felt you found something from inside you as an actor that connected you on some level to Megyn Kelly that wasn't part of her physical appearance?
Yeah, I mean, listen, when we started, I never, ever thought I would ever say I have that much in common with Megyn Kelly. We have different point of views on a lot of things. But I, through research, started realizing that she was talking about a lot of things that I could relate to as a woman in my industry. You know, we definitely live in a world where men are rewarded and applauded for being ambitious, and for being powerful, and for having drive, and for not taking no as an answer, and sometimes being the not nice person in the room because that's the right thing to do, and it's right for the company, and it's right for your business. And when women tend to have those qualities, they very easily can be turned around and weaponized against you, or turned around into a negative. And
right, a man is driven, a woman's a bitch.
Yep. There you go. So that's where I think I emotionally tapped in to this part. Megyn Kelly was part of something that was just really kind of mind-blowing that happened at Fox. But the everyday going to work, the process, the being called a bitch when you're just trying to be the best at your job, all of those things felt very familiar to me. Even though, you know, I feel like I said, our worlds are so different. As a woman, I related to those things. And I could empathize with a woman like that, being in a position that she found herself in, having to struggle with the idea of coming forward and losing all of that.
And is that, to you, the clearest line between what happened to Megyn Kelly, what happens to actresses in Hollywood, the difference between Roger Ailes and Harvey Weinstein? Where do you see the most direct link between what's in this movie and what's in show business?
Oh, it's all a direct link. I mean, I feel like this issue does not, you know, it doesn't behave or look different in different places just because of the industry. It is a nonpartisan issue. This is really a human right to feel safe in your workplace, whether you work at Fox or you work at CNN or you work in Hollywood or you work at a bank in Minnesota or a mine in Minnesota. This is a human right that we should all have.
Charlize Theron plays Megyn Kelly in Bombshell. She's also a producer on the film. Charlize, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bombshell is in theaters now. Up next on The Frame, if you have to bite your tongue at the holiday dinner party, a couple of artists have an alternative for you. Welcome back to The Frame. I'm John Horn. So you made it through Thanksgiving without any dinner table fights with your friends, family, or in-laws. I somehow managed. But maybe you bottled something up that you really want to unload. Well, now there's an art project for that just in time for Christmas. It's called Not at the Dinner Table, and it's a participatory work that gives folks a chance to cut loose in a recorded phone message directed at that friend or relative. The artist duo, who go by the name Jeff and Gordon, launched the annual project about 5 years ago. The Frame contributor Stephen Cuevas dialed in.
Hello, this is Jeff. This is Gordon, and you've reached Not at the Dinner Table,
where you can leave an anonymous voicemail message addressed to that important person in your life that you really disagree with. about an important...
I didn't leave a message because I'm lucky enough to not have any major beefs with a loved one. But as you'll hear, lots of other people do.
Well, you're no longer at our dinner table, but I think this is going to be cathartic for me.
For my best friend, who's a total Trump supporter now, we were really good friends.
I just feel like you're getting it so wrong on gun control.
That just sort of was the terrible icing on that awful cake that you serve every Christmas.
And I'm happy that you're not around.
Artists Gordon Winnemko and Jeff Foy encourage callers to pick an issue so divisive that confronting a friend or relative about it could turn a joyous holiday family feast into a vicious food fight.
You know, and in the interest of keeping the peace, we just don't talk about that.
That's Gordon Winnemko.
These are things you're not supposed to do at the dinner table so that the family can have a nice dinner.
And that's Jeff Foy. Each year, the duo set the hotline in a different part of the country. For this year's edition, they chose area code 785, which covers the northern half of Kansas. Why did you choose this area code?
That area code also encompasses the geographic center of the United States. In years past, we've looked at specific events and locations.
One year, Winnemko says they used the area code of Newtown, Connecticut, to raise the issue of gun control. Newtown is where a mass shooter killed 20 children at Sandy Hook Elementary School 7 years ago this month.
It's one nation. And is it possible that we could find a center?
You know, what does it actually sound like to say those things? What does it sound like to say speech that is never said? And what would you say to that person if you actually allowed yourself to say it?
Look, I've kept my mouth shut and listened politely and nodded my head for years, but I can't take it anymore. I think your beliefs are stupid. For instance, rattlesnakes are not evil.
In some ways, it could be like a rehearsal. It's possible that someone could leave a message and then direct that person to go and listen to the message.
To participate, you can leave a message or you can just listen to a wide selection of messages curated by the artists. Callers are instructed to stick to a specific issue that may also be dividing us as a country. But Winnemko says folks are also welcome to share whatever may be fueling that dinner table conflict.
I remember one where the woman called and she said, "Mom, you're abusive and I can't deal with you anymore." And she said goodbye to her.
Wow.
And you could tell that she was in tears.
Jeff and Gordon's work often explores the way people interact with each other, with public institutions and governments. In one of their first exhibits from 2010, the artists used foreclosed homes in the Inland Empire as a backdrop for a stinging satire of consumerism and predatory lending. But things get much more intimate with Not at the Dinner Table. The calls we hear get personal and specific about what's driving people apart.
Hi, Steve. This is Mike. And
in one call, Mike explains to his buddy Steve that although Steve's views on stuff like evolution and guns don't jibe with his, he still appreciates their friendship. But Mike reached a breaking point over a movie, a trilogy, actually, Atlas Shrugged. Steve loves it. It's based on the novel by the late writer Ayn Rand, who's revered by many hard-right conservatives.
And Ayn Rand and everything, that the lackeys that have kind of taken up her flag of callous individualism that just don't really understand what you're talking about. I'm not sure about your whole perception of reality anymore.
And we do get messages from both sides of the political spectrum.
Trump won. Accept it and get over it.
Or there's someone berating their person for being an angry leftist.
Stop your crying.
Probably the bulk is from the left.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, the messages I listened to, it was just a reminder to me that we often engage with these issues like guns in a very disconnected way. Like maybe we're commenting on someone's like Twitter feed or something. And to hear people's actual voices and to hear the emotion just was a reminder that not only are these issues complex, but the people engaging in them are pretty complex too.
Definitely in the digital age, the human voice kind of gets left out of things. This is still a distance, but that personal, intimate element's there.
You are thinking about the other people, and maybe that step alone is one of the big, big goals of the piece.
It's an empathy-generating project. Mm. If the project puts you in that space where you can kind of relate to the other person and empathize with them, where it humanizes that other person.
Please leave your message after the tone.
After I left my message, I realized that I forgot to say the most important thing, which is that I love you. I love you so much, and that's why it matters that we have this rift in our views.
This is Jeff. This is Gordon. Pretty good stuff here, right?
Yeah.
We'd like to hear what you have to say. So just press pound to leave your own message.
Please leave your message after the tone.
For The Frame, I'm Stephen Cueva.
And that'll do it for today. Don't forget to listen to The Frame Weekend, Saturday afternoon at 2. This show is produced by Darby Maloney, Monica Bushman, Jonathan Shiflett, and Julia Paskin, with help this week from Itzy Quintanilla. Our news clerk is Andrea Gutierrez. Eduardo Perez is the show's engineer. Taylor McFerrin wrote our theme music, and our senior producer is Oscar Garza. I'm John Horn. Thanks for listening. We're back here Monday at the Moen Broadcast Center.
Hi, kitten.